Life is too short for shit books. That's the mantra of The Book Alchemist, and I'm your host, Heather Sutty. In this episode, we meet Madeline Black, otherwise known as the Courage Cultivator. She's a psychotherapist and also the author of her own memoir, Unbroken. Madeline has an unusual personal story, which she uses to inspire and motivate others. A deeply moving and empowering story, she discovers that life is about how a person chooses to recover from adversity. We're not defined by what knocks us down, we are defined by how we get back up. We discuss the books which have shaped her life, and I'm delighted Madeline is on The Book Alchemist. So, Madeline, tell me about how reading has been a big part of your early life.
Oh, so really, I think as quickly as I could read a book, I started to read by myself. My dad was always one of these dads that would tell me stories when I went to bed at night. Tell me a story, Daddy. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it was like James and the Giant Peach, something like that. It was just pure escapism, you know, a real fantasy world. And it just fed my imagination. And it just really blew me away that just within pieces of paper, you could be transported to a different world or a different idea or different thoughts. And I always, since then, since I could read, I've always had a book on the go.
Books are amazing because they transport us into another world, don't they?
Absolutely.
You must have read a lot in the run-up to becoming a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
What type of books did you read to feed your mind that weren't perhaps directly related to your chosen subject?
Well, it's interesting because the college I went to in the East End of Glasgow, I think it's gone now, was maybe slightly alternative. It wasn't your maybe, you know, regular kind of form of therapy. It was a blend that was created by the person who took the course. And so our film and book reading list was maybe a bit different. So there were things that were really about being human. So things like Tuesdays with Maury or Paulo Coelho or, you know, these kind of books, which also just very heartfelt books as well. Mm-hmm. And it's about, I think, just being a better human. So it's about humanity, really. Mm-hmm. So those were the books that the stuffy supervision books or the, you know, the actual core theory books, I find those very hard to read. They didn't really speak to my heart or speak to me. But yeah, ones that connect me into myself to give me a better understanding of other human beings, they're the ones that always helped me.
And there are some amazing books just in that genre. You know, you mentioned Tuesdays with Maury, which is lovely. You mentioned Paul Coelho. Obviously, yep. The Alchemist is one of his most well-known books. And there's also books like The Celestine Prophecy and Eckhart Tolle's books.
Eckhart Tolle is amazing. And also, we'll watch him on YouTube as well. And just because his book is really about, The Power of Now, which is a book that I gave to many of my clients. I would gift them this book because he starts his book. Yesterday was World Suicide Prevention Day. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting on the bench and he's contemplating whether he should stay in this world or not. And so many of my clients resonated with that. And it's about, as we spoke a little bit earlier before, about our mindset, you know, where our thoughts go. I think we definitely can become our thoughts. So if we are just always focusing on the negative, it's very easy just to get caught up in that space. But when we can change the things we look at, the things we look at change. So it's definitely these kind of books have really helped me. And then I've just passed them on to my clients as well.
Eckhart Tolle is amazing because I have read his book a number of times at various points in my life. And I've been through, you know, major life challenges, you know, the breakdown of a marriage, the loss of a job. I took myself to Africa to live for a year to do voluntary work. And I remember reading Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and it was almost to try and reset my brain because I thought when I travelled to Africa, to Tanzania, okay, well, I'll be in a new place, a new location, and I won't think about all the things that have gone wrong and blah, blah, blah. But of course, where you go, your thoughts go. And what I was able to do, I really sought comfort in that book because it enabled me to be in the moment.
Yeah.
So I was consciously trying to think, okay, what's around me? What can I see? What can I smell? What can I taste? Who am I engaging with? Rather than half of my brain thinking, oh gosh, like that was a nightmare, what happened at home and how am I going to cope and how am I going to earn money and all of these things. So books are really, really powerful, aren't they?
Yeah, and also I think being in the now just allows you not to judge what you feel. and just to accept everything that's going on and not to think, if only I've done this, you know, just allowing whatever comes up. And that's very much being in the present moment. So that book for me, obviously with my history and my story, really helped me because I was so caught in the past and so worried about the future that I was never really in this moment. So for me, like you, it just changed so much. I just thought, well, the past is now done. It's just pictures that my head is replaying over and over, and the future hasn't happened. So all my fears were based on my imagination. So I really had to learn how to, for a start, land back in my body because I had left it many, many years ago, and also to be as present as I possibly could. And I try to do that. It's not always so easy because we do get caught and hooked by stuff, but to be, just to acknowledge where you're at is where you're at, and to allow whatever comes up without any judgment, I think, is what I can do to be human.
Judgment is such a strange thing, isn't it? In terms of, you were constantly judging ourselves and other people. And what I love about reading is it makes me mindful of being in the moment of that story, whether it's a non-fiction book or a fiction book or even just a cookbook. You know, it kind of focuses you, doesn't it?
Yes, and it stops you thinking about all the other stuff. Yeah. You can put that on hold, you know, total fantasy, just get caught up in that moment. And then you are in that moment with whoever you're reading about, fiction or non-fiction. So yeah, it's brilliant.
You yourself have written a memoir.
I have.
It's called Unbroken.
Yep.
What drove you to write this memoir?
Yeah, I was never going to write. I was never going to speak because it is a story of sexual violence. I was gang raped when I was 13, and actually only in the writing of it realised I was raped 3 more times before the age of 18. It was, a process. I shared my story with an organisation called the Forgiveness Project because there's an element of forgiveness. And most of their events are in London. I'm a Londoner. And one of the storytellers, or our founder calls us story healers, which I really love that word because I love the power of storytelling, told me there was an event in Glasgow in Shorelands Academy, which is like down the road from where I live. An incredible woman called Marion Partington, whose sister Lucy had been murdered by Rose and Fred West. And when I heard her speak, even now as I speak, I've got goosebumps on my arms. She just emanated peace, and she had shared her story in prisons for years and years and years. And I bought her book, which was beautiful. She's a beautiful writer. It's called If I Sit Very Still. And she came to a place of forgiveness after feeling murderous rage, and inside she wrote, "Now you must speak." Wow. And it wasn't something I'd ever contemplated, even though I had literally just shared my story publicly for the first time. And I thought, I could write my story down. So I had written about 12 pages a few years prior, which took me 4 years. Someone suggested writing it down, and I would stop and start it, and then it was the shame that was too big. I thought, I can't let anybody know what had happened, because I wrongly thought it would be a reflection of me. Now I know the shame was nothing to do with me. It was never my shame. It always belonged to them. But when she planted that seed, I thought, I could maybe write my story. And just like the 4 years I struggled to write, one night the words just flowed out. I always feel like I vomited my book. The words just literally appeared. Yeah. And it took me about 8 weeks, and I'd written 70,000 words. So when you're ready, I think the words appear.
Did you find it difficult and cathartic, or one or the other?
Both. Both. So when I'd written the 12 pages, it was for a teacher that I've been going to for many years. I guess you would call him a shaman, a man named Imaho. He suggested I should write my story down. And then he spoke about me at one of his workshops, and I just was mortified because he told me to use every single detail, don't spare anything. And then people knew my darkest and most shameful secret. So when it came to publishing my book, they said, I don't think we can include the actual details of what took place on that night. But then I had worked it so much with myself, I thought, well, why should we brush it under the carpet? Mm-hmm. Why should I make people feel comfortable with my truth? This is what takes place every day somewhere on this planet to men, women, children. I shouldn't make it easier for the reader to read, because if they pick up a memoir about gang rape, they know there will be some details that might be uncomfortable, but no spoilers to anyone. I do survive, and I do believe that I now thrive in my life. And so I wanted to show people really what takes place. So I don't really agree with it, but they decided on the chapter called All of One Night that they put a trigger warning. Mm-hmm. Because I think, well, I didn't get a trigger warning at 13. I walked into this situation and that's what happened, but I understand why they did that. So there is a trigger warning. So most people say, they saw it and they wanted to read it, you know, out of respect to me, and they were fine. They didn't die from shock or anything, you know. But just to really show people what can take place.
How has your work as a psychotherapist, do you think, has it helped or hindered you process what must have been an unbelievably traumatic experience?
Yeah, you know, I think when you're a therapist and you work with clients, it's great. When it's your own stuff, being a therapist just goes out the window. So I haven't got to this place overnight. I have to make that very clear. It's been decades and decades of talking therapy, alternative therapies, lots of therapeutic body work. And, you know, if I look back now, when my memories returned when my oldest daughter became 13, so which obviously is quite obvious now, it's always going to come back, but I had did what most people did and shut them down and locked them in a box somewhere deep in the caverns of my mind, right in the back. They're always going to come back. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you think as a therapist I would be aware, but when they came back, was in complete denial. I thought if it was been that bad, surely I would remember if it was that bad. Yeah, denial is really just our way of not wanting to accept all the details, because as I said before, it was the shame. And I thought, if I tell my therapist this, he'll be disgusted and he won't want to work with me. But after a while, I saw that I could drive myself crazy with the denial. It was so strong. And I was about 3 years into my therapy that I thought, I'm going to do more damage with denying it, driving myself crazy, than the actual pictures and memories themselves. And it was all the combination of when I came to this place of forgiveness, which took me by surprise. I was a kind of an accidental forgiver. And accepting what took place was really, I guess, when I started to heal. But no, being a therapist didn't come into it in any way. I was just a client at that point.
I mean, I can't even imagine what it must be like to have to process.
Yeah.
All of those thoughts and emotions, because our brains are so powerful, aren't they? Yep. It's like you can't turn it off.
Yep. Well, I think, you know, when we do go into trauma, whatever the trauma is, it's a very normal process that your mind shuts it off. It numbs you out as a form of protection. Mm-hmm. So it's almost when it came back, it made it feel very surreal or very dreamlike. And I've worked at Women's Aid in East Kilbride for 14 years. I was a volunteer at Glasgow Rape Crisis. And I've worked with so many women doing therapy and so many men as well that had been abused or raped. And I just thought, oh, I've just absorbed all their stories. This isn't mine. I've made it up. I was convinced I'd made it up. And my therapist would say, if you're going to make anything up, why would you choose that? Mm-hmm. Would you not choose something else to make up? And I just thought, gosh, yeah, how powerful the mind is. And it's not always our friend, you know. It sometimes still thinks it had to protect me in some ways. The denial, I guess, is part of that protection. But it always comes back, whether we believe it or not, when we are ready to face it. And I had to eventually think, okay, you know, I didn't die. They didn't kill me. They made three serious attempts to kill me, but I'm here and I have to accept it. Otherwise, I will have this hanging over me forever. Mm. So I think working through trauma is multi-layered. I used to say to my clients, it's an onion that we peel back, and you could be great for a year or two, and then you might get triggered by something else. And you think, oh, there's another piece of work I need to do. And on the whole, I think I'm okay. But just lately, I've had a couple of triggers and I thought, hang on a minute. I thought I had dealt with all that. Why is that coming back? But now, because I've done so much work on myself, so much self-awareness, I can just literally say, well, thank you for showing me there's a little bit of residue left inside, and I can get back into my body, like we talked about, being in that moment, and just say, okay, this isn't happening anymore. This is just a little trauma burp, a bit of, you know, a trigger that I need to just sit with and allow it to rise up to the surface, and then it's gone. It's like a contraction, disappeared.
You're incredibly brave.
Well, I don't like the word brave, because I feel like now, yeah, I didn't courageous. Speak for years. No, I don't like that word either. Well, on LinkedIn, they call me I can't even remember my name now, courage cultivator.
Because love
I
that.
Do, yeah, because I do believe that courage is contagious. And it was someone else's story, her sharing her story, that helped me to find mine. And I'm just standing on the shoulders of many people. But I don't wish that what I do was considered brave. I wish it was considered normal, that we can speak about the difficult things as well as the nice things as well, because this is what makes up the world. It's the paradox. There's always beautiful stuff going on, and there's always horrific stuff taking place every day somewhere. So it's about being able to hold both of those real, you know, situations in this world. But I feel like now, because I have found my voice, I will never be quiet about sexual violence. I will always speak out about consent, sexual violence, rape, inequality, misogyny, sexism. I will always speak out. And I hope that other people will find their voice because of it, because that's exactly what happened to me. And there is an army of people out there that do speak out, and we all rise each other, you know, by speaking out. We rise each other up together. So definitely.
When you were young and deciding what to do with your life, do you think what happened to you informed your choice to become a psychotherapist to help other people?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I've been asked that before, but actually I write a little bit about my parents in my book, and my dad was a Holocaust survivor. So all of his family had been murdered at Auschwitz, apart from his sister. One brother got out before the Nazis invaded their home. He sadly had a heart attack and died without going through the horrors of the camps. But my dad, if you met him, unlike my auntie Eva, she had chronic schizophrenia, agoraphobia. She survived the whole of Auschwitz. My dad was in a labor camp. He just loved life and he laughed. And I could never understand how they both had a similar journey, but one came out so destroyed. And if you met my dad, you would never have any idea. And now, looking back, I know his laughter was his strength. To be able to laugh after experiencing massive trauma. You know, I used to think I just had one night of extreme trauma. He had years and years on the run, living with false papers. We have a photo at home and he's in a Hitler Youth uniform because he could speak Yiddish and German. So he hid in plain sight, terrified to go for a pee in case they would see he was circumcised, that he was Jewish. And so that just, from a young age, intrigued me. How can two people have a similar experience and come out so different? And when I worked as a therapist, that also intrigued me. You know, I could get maybe, say, for example, two people whose father had died, and one would say, I'll never get over the loss of my dad. And one would say, I'm so grateful that I had that man to be my father. So everything is about our attitude and where we put our attention. And that's always fascinated me. So I do believe I was born to super survivors. My mum had her neck broken in an operation. She had already been damaged from a car accident, so she had kind of damage in her vertebrae. But she woke up paralyzed after a simple hysterectomy down one side and has got her strength back and walked again. And when I was researching my book, I read this book called Super Survivors because it fascinates me. And I said, is it genetic? And he said, not enough research has shown to be genetic, but they do believe if you witness people that are super survivors, it rubs off on you. And that's when I had that thought, not even taking it on board really, but just seeing the way my dad lived his life and approached his life, I knew that really, if we put our minds to it and our hearts, we can get past anything that happens to us. So he was definitely my greatest teacher in my life. I'm going to get all emotional. But yeah,
I'm without very a doubt.
Yeah.
Moving on to other women. Yeah. I know that one of the books that you've read, a novel that you loved as probably, I think, as much as I did, was Bonnie Garmus's Lessons in Chemistry. Tell me about your love for that book.
Yeah, so my husband and I, when we do long journeys, we'll always pick a book, or I'll always pick a book that I want to listen to, and we'll listen to it. We've been together 40 years, so maybe listening to a book, you know, having a long journey, we might not chat as much. And I said, do you want to listen to this? He said, yeah, okay. And I didn't know if he would love it, because I think it's a very feminine book, because it is about really struggles of equality, you know, being this groundbreaking chemist, working amongst everyday sexism and never being recognized for the fantastic work that she does, being ostracized, being a single mum, you know, all the challenges that come with that, or living with someone, losing someone, grief. It just contained so much in that one book. And then I've got a dog as well. So listening to it on Audible, to hear the dog, I can't remember the dog's
6:30.
Name. 6:30. Yeah, 6:30 had a fabulous name. I wanted to say 9 3/4, but that's Harry Potter's station, isn't it? I knew it was a number somewhere. You know, just hearing the dog narrator chapter, that was fabulous as well. So I read another book as well called Racing in the Rain, which is also all by a dog. The whole book is narrated by a dog.
Wow.
His owner used to race cars, which is a fabulous book as well. Very different. I don't know why that one popped into my head. But yeah, I just thought it was a very empowering book.
Yeah.
Really was. And interesting to hear my husband from a male perspective. He has three daughters and me, so he's got no chance. He's a feminist anyway. He was really moved by it as well.
Yeah. I think what was brilliant also about Lessons in Chemistry is that Bonnie Garmus, the author, yes, she wrote it in her early 60s.
Yes.
And, you know, she was a woman who worked in advertising, was a creative director, was incredibly successful, and her husband was a scientist, and they travelled all over the world. I think they lived in Canada, then they moved to Switzerland, then they moved to London, and her story was very serendipitous because throughout her career, she'd always been usurped by men who took the credit for her great work. And that's where the idea of the story came. And she didn't really believe that anyone would be interested in the story. And then she had a meeting, bizarrely, she was in the same room as someone who knew Emily Blunt's sister, Felicity Blunt. Mm-hmm. And Felicity Blunt is also married to Stanley Tucci, who we love.
Yes.
But Felicity is a literary agent at an organisation called Curtis Brown.
Okay,
and
yes.
She read the book and she was like, wow. And Bonnie wasn't sure whether or not this was going to fly. And of course it did.
It's flown. And Apple are doing an adaptation, which I can't wait to see what they do of as well. So I was looking in my diary, I've just been on holiday just to see what's coming up. And I've got I think it's a virtual event that Bonnie is taking part in. So I don't remember booking it, but obviously just saw it and booked it. It must be from months ago. So I'm really looking forward to hearing her journey as well. Because as you say, 60, you're not too old to write a book at 60.
Absolutely. You're never too old and it's never too late.
Absolutely.
So aside from the success of your memoir and your psychotherapy business and keeping fit, because you look amazing and I know that you are incredibly healthy, what else do you enjoy doing in your spare time when you're not working or writing?
Well, with the start of lockdown, it's kind of bad timing, but I was being invited to speak all around the world. Once I started to speak, I've been so lucky. I've just always, someone in the audience will just say, can you come and speak here? So my first international gig was for UNICEF and I went to the Maldives. So just before lockdown, it was February 2020, the first time ever I was a closing keynote for a fabulous speaker conference in Namibia. And I was getting, you know, quite confident. Oh, here, my career's going like this. It was going up and up. And then we couldn't understand why they were taking our temperature at the airport. So we were all joking, oh, this virus thing, it's nothing. And we came back. And just before that, actually, I decided I was going to stop working as a therapist because I was speaking so much around the world and in the UK. And I just thought something has to give. I can't do both. And I didn't want to let my clients down. So lockdown came in. My diary emptied. I had no clients to see. And I really struggled. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I going to do with myself? And everyone was home drinking gin, doing 1,500-piece jigsaws. Two daughters came back in January. We'd had an empty, nobody there. One was living in Merchant City and was a bit terrified. She said it was just went to pot. Mm-hmm. And one had been traveling for 3 months, was meant to be 10 months, and she came home. She wasn't happy. So we went from this empty house to a house just filled with chaos. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it really impacted on me more than I really thought. My mental health was like, what do I do? Mm-hmm. What do I do now? So I started a podcast myself, which I've actually stopped because, you know, life never goes in the direction that you think. And my elderly mum, for whatever reason, had to come and live with us and she's moving out soon, but she's been with me for 2 years. But I wanted to share some hope and some positivity. So it's also called Unbroken, which with the subtitle Healing Through Storytelling, because I love storytelling. And I only spoke to thrivers. So I spoke to people that had also been through adversity, but had really not just overcome it, they had bounced forward and they were making a difference to other people. One person only hadn't shared her story before, but I took a risk with her and it really was beautiful. It paid off. And they were I got to sit in their fabulous energy and then I got to share it. And just people are incredible. You know, what they go through and how they can walk it out and thrive in life. So they were just amazing. And through my own, you know, sharing of my story, as I mentioned before, I was part of the Forgiveness Project. I took part in a project called the Global Resilience Project, where Emma Bell, she was a former judge, interviewed 50 thrivers, she called us. So I had access to a lot of amazing people. The very first episode is still my most popular episode, which is a guy called Mike Haynes. You may remember his brother David was a humanitarian and it was a few years ago he was kidnapped by ISIS and then they very tragically executed them live on a video which was shared. But he's the most beautiful human being. He said, if I bring hate or revenge into my life, then they've won. So he travels into schools, he meets with young people, he brings communities together and shows them that we're more alike than we are different. And he has a group called Global Unity, and that's what he does. So every week, the stories would just get more amazing and more amazing. So I leave 123 episodes. I did stop it in the end. I don't really know where life is taking me. I just really just try to see, I'm at where I'm at, and I'll just see where it all goes.
What book are you currently reading?
Well, I'm doing something that I don't often do. I was just away on holidays. So I thought this will give me a chance. I never read series because I get so many books. I'm not really a professional reader, but I'm on NetGalley, so I get a lot of advanced copies there. I do feel a bit of an imposter. I have published one book, but I have a lot of friends that are called proper authors and they've done like 10, 15 books. Loads of them will send me their books in advance. I get so many copies from publishers that I know. So I have thousands of books. But I kept hearing about The Seven Sisters by Lucinda Riley.
Yes.
And there's 8 books in the series. I'm now on book 3. And it's just beautiful. So they're all, there's 6 sisters and they're named after the star constellation, the 7 sisters of Pallades. I don't know if that's pronounced. So it's a bit mythology. It's a little bit of modern time. And every book goes back into the past. So their father, Parsault, passes away. He adopted all 6 sisters. There isn't a 7th one. It's not that I know as yet. And he leaves them all a clue. And he leaves them like a map of how to find where they came from and how he adopted them. And so it's like a fact-finding mission and how they're linked to the past and the mythology of the Greek stars and the gods. And yeah, so I know she passed away when she'd finished the 7th one, but I think her son wrote the 8th one for her. So yeah. So I've done what I said I'd never do and I'm actually quite hooked.
Oh, do you know, I'm going to follow in your footsteps because so many people I know in my book group have raved about it.
Yes.
But I've always been, like you, a bit hesitant when it comes to series. So, for example, there's another series of books which I have and I have had for about 5 years called The Cazalet Chronicles.
Oh, I don't know those Cazalet. Ones. Okay.
And I just can't commit. Yes, it just seems so much. But thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for
Honestly,
having me.
What an inspiration. And thank you also for bringing me a copy of Unbroken. Will you sign it for me?
Of course, it's already signed.
Oh, is it? So it is. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. New episodes in our library feature every Thursday. And if you'd like to contact me, please email heather@thebookalchemist.com.